The climate in Iowa is dramatically different from the climate in Georgia or Arizona, but houses being built all over the country today look pretty much the same. This hour, we'll talk about building with the environment and climate in mind. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Here we are in the heat of the summer, air conditioners running full blast. In a few months, we'll stoke up the furnaces. In this day and age, we build homes and buildings with the assumption that we can heat and cool as much as we want. Today, our home improvement expert Bill McAnally will be here, along with architect Kevin Nordmeyer, to talk about a different way of doing things. Then later on, Bill and Kevin will answer your questions about anything from energy efficiency to your wet basement. Join the conversation after the news. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. Good morning. I'm Charity Nebbe. Heavy rains have left many Iowans with wet basements, and our home improvement expert Bill McAnally is here today to answer your questions as you clean up. But we're going to start with a conversation about building with the physical environment and climate in mind. Good morning, Bill.
Hey, good morning, Charity. How are you doing today?
Good. Thanks for being with us, even though you sound like you're several hundred miles away.
Yes. Sorry.
No, that's all right. And Kevin Nordmeyer is also here with us today. He's an architect and principal at BNIM Architects in Des Moines. He specializes in green building and is former director of the Iowa Energy Center. Kevin, thank you for being here today.
Yes, I'm glad to be here. Good morning.
And as I mentioned, we're going to start with a conversation about building with the physical environment in mind. And in recent decades, we've really seen a shift in building in the United States, a homogenization of architecture for homes around the country, and the regional architecture that we associate with older homes isn't present, really, in modern subdivisions. That represents more than just a change in taste and style, because homes used to be built to work well with the environment they were being built in. Kevin, can you give us an example of how that worked?
Well, before modern technologies, before mechanical systems, before electrical systems, all builders had was the environment. They had temperature swings, they had seasons, they had daylight. So buildings, homes and commercial buildings were built to naturally ventilate and be daylighted because they didn't have any modern mechanical systems. With the invention of mechanical systems in the early 1900s, we've all become so accustomed to – we have generations of people now that haven't experienced anything but air conditioning and sort of climate-controlled buildings. So we've created our artificial climates within buildings because technology enabled us to, and we could be more comfortable than we used to be able to be without those systems.
When I think about regional architecture, I think of the big southern homes with the verandas and the shade to allow people to spend time outside, enjoying the breezes when they were available. I think about some of the architecture in the Southwest that took advantage of, you know, maybe adobe or building materials that would insulate the home from the heat. What kind of architecture do we have in Iowa that represents that kind of approach, building with the environment in mind?
Well, historically, for those listening in today, if you think about some of the old historic buildings that you're familiar with in Iowa, old courthouses in communities across Iowa, older historic buildings across the state, you'll notice that the basements the first floor was always elevated out of the ground a little bit. That was to create the basements to be habitable for daylight and views and for ventilation. But they also had quite a bit of windows per wall area on the building. And so a lot of windows that could be placed across the building on opposite sides of the building for natural ventilation. But also you'd see cupolas on tops of buildings and things like that at the time to naturally stack ventilate these buildings in the evening. So as it would get cooler in the evening, they could open up the windows and sort of purge the building of heat that accumulated during the day and so naturally ventilate that in the evening. And then close the building back up in the morning and then have a constant cycle of natural ventilation throughout the day.
And, of course, Iowa has an added challenge that people in the South don't have, and that's that we're very hot in the summer and we're very cold in
Correct.
The winter. So how was that taken into account?
Well, insulation now is a really important part of our lives. And since we are all reliant on modern systems of electricity, we all have computers, televisions, modern appliances in our homes and things like that, we energy conservation is an important thing. So insulation, you know, insulating ourselves from those temperature extremes is a really important thing for our climate. And so the utility companies in Iowa, in terms of energy conservation efforts, really focus on increasing insulation in the exterior envelope to create a high-performing envelope for the building as a first step in terms of creating a passive house, if you will.
Now, okay, after air conditioning and furnaces, central air, after these inventions became commonplace, we've seen houses change a lot. And Bill, it strikes me that they've continued to change over time. There was sort of a gradual change as people became accustomed to these systems. But these days, they seem to have gotten to be really the same everywhere in the country. What kind of shift have you seen in your house building career?
Well, I think just exactly like Kevin said, you know, people are looking, you know, how they insulate homes, and technology has changed so much, you know, just in the last few years, the differences in technology and the performance of the heating and cooling equipment and the, you know, conditioning of the air and how to control the humidity and for your personal needs, because a lot of people like it, you know, like say days like today, or in the past few days, they like to keep it, you know, maybe in the upper 60s, even though it may be 90 outside and extremely high humidity. So, you know, you have to have the equipment and to do that, but you also have to have the installers and the designers, knowledgeable in this new equipment and the personal needs of the homeowner. So there's a lot of questions and an awful lot of design that goes into, you know, the sizing of the equipment so that it operates at maximum efficiency. But yet, when you go back, like Kevin said, again, is some of the older buildings, it's amazing how well that, you know, they performed when they had these old brick buildings or stone buildings, and they had all this mass that, you know, you could bring in the cooler air and it would cool the mass down. You'd close the building up and you know, rely on cooling or warming depending on the season of the materials. And now it just seems, you know, we're just, a lot of the houses are thrown up very fast, and, you know, and a lot of the, like, say, the windows are not designed for cross ventilation. They're more for, you know, image from the street, sometimes curb appeal. And, you know, the one thing I wish that we would do a little bit more of is kind of look back at the success, especially like again, Kevin mentioned, you know, like the basement's out of the ground farther, so you can actually see out of the basement, but it also keeps the, you know, the basement out of the ground and a little farther, and you don't have as many moisture issues, and you can have cross ventilation in the basement as well. So, you know, if we look back and kind of meld the old designs and the new designs, put them together, you know, we can have some very high performing but yet practical, healthy and efficient homes.
Well, and I'm sure with some of these big houses that are being built today, I'm sure there are a lot of people who have built a house and then been really shocked by how much it costs to cool that house or heat that house when that wasn't really a consideration in the design process. But Kevin, if energy efficiency is important to you and you want to keep the amount of climate control that you have to use in your own home to a minimum, I mean, there have been such incredible technological advancements. How do you take advantage of that? What are some of the things that you should be thinking about?
Well, if you're thinking about a new home, the first thing is educate yourself on the modern technologies that are out there today, both modern technologies and also some of these passive systems that we've all known for generations. And there's some great resources. There's Passive House Institute US. It's www.phius.org. It's a great site. Also, the Iowa Energy Center, iowaenergycenter.org, is another great site. Department of Energy is also another. But the main thing is ask your builder very specific questions. First, educate yourself, and then ask specific questions about are you orienting my house appropriately to minimize heat gain in the summer. So placing windows appropriately on a house to minimize heat gain in the summer and to maximize solar heat gain in the wintertime. So orienting the house, shaping the house right, placing high-performing windows and a high-performing building envelope. So all of those things are real passive things that we can do to first minimize and reduce our cooling and heating loads. And then having a good, smart mechanical contractor on the project to install the appropriately sized mechanical system, maybe a ground source heat pump system, which is very efficient, and using energy recovery ventilators to really have a high-performing system that doesn't have to run as often as it might if it's a poorly insulated home or oriented incorrectly. But when it does run, it's running in a very efficient manner to reduce your energy costs.
So it's about equipping yourself to ask the right questions. But also, I mean, not all builders are as knowledgeable as some about these high-efficiency options. It also involves shopping around, right?
Correct. And that's something that Bill actually, through this program over the last many years and throughout his career, Bill has done a great job of going across the state and educating builders and homeowners and all different sorts of trades regarding the residential construction industry, really trying to teach them how to build in a high-performing manner.
Now, Kevin, I know you live in a very old home.
Right,
and
right.
So if you, and so do I, so if you live in an older home and you think, well, this sounds really terrific, but my house heats up like an oven every day, and, you know, I would like to take advantage of some of this modern technology in an older home, how do you go about that?
Again, it's the same kind of thing. The first when you go out in the wintertime, the first thing you do is you put on a winter coat. You're insulating yourself from those cold temperatures. So the first thing you want to do with a house is look at the insulation in your attic, the insulation in the walls, the quality of the windows. And the utility companies, wherever you live in Iowa, typically have rebate programs to help incentivize and help pay for some of the costs of upgrading your home in that manner. So, again, the first thing is trying to insulate yourself from those extreme temperatures that we have in Iowa, and then looking at the systems in your home. You know, is it an older furnace that you can consider replacing with something that's more efficient? Look at all the appliances in your home. And are the Energy Star rated? If your refrigerator is more than 10 years old, it's going to pay for itself if you get a new refrigerator, for example. And so looking at all those things together to improve your home will reduce your energy costs long term.
All right, we're going to take a short break. We'll be back in just a moment. Today, I'm talking with Kevin Nordmeyer. He's an architect and principal at BNIM Architects in Des Moines, and he specializes in green building. Bill McAnally is also here today, our home improvement expert, and they are both available to answer your questions. We know there's been a lot of rain, particularly in central Iowa this week. It seems like everyone I know has a wet basement. So if you have some questions about your basement, cleanup, that kind of thing, you can give us a call. If you have questions about energy efficiency and green building, you can give us a call. The number is 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. This is Talk of Iowa. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Our home improvement expert, Bill McAnally, is here today, along with Kevin Nordmeyer, who's an architect and principal at BNIM Architects in Des Moines. He specializes in green building, and you may know him as the former director of the Iowa Energy Center. You are welcome to join the conversation with your questions about green building, about energy efficiency, or about anything else on your home improvement to-do list, including cleaning up that wet basement. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Eric is on the line from Des Moines. Hi, Eric.
Hi. I bought what I'm hoping is a retirement home here in Des Moines, and I've been spending a couple years fixing it up, including air sealing and insulating. And it's not a fun project. It's pretty tedious, but it's also, I think, something simple enough anybody can do if they're willing to take the time and make sure they do it correctly. I use expanded polystyrene and mineral wool, and I would just encourage anyone who's interested, greenbuildingadvisor.com is a professionally moderated site that I found very useful. I'm hoping to just cool the house with a couple of window units, which, you know, similar to mini splitless duct ductless system, which, you know, is very efficient because so much the heating and cooling is lost through the ductwork. And I just am wondering, I guess, are there resources, training classes for people who want to improve their house envelope on their own?
All right, Eric, thanks a lot for your call. And Bill, that sounds like one for you.
Well, yeah, there are some training courses. Some of them are through community colleges throughout the state. You know, they offer some. Iowa State Extension, I think, is still offering some. But there's also some that are put on by utility companies very often. Touchstone Energy puts them on, you know, during the year. Sometimes they'll have them even at county fairs. But you know, Liant Energy, Mid-American, and Black Hills, they have some builder training ones that are usually in January that anyone is, you know, can attend. And there's a lot of sessions that pertain especially to air sealing and HVAC, you know, heating, ventilation, and air conditioning. But, you know, the sites that you mentioned are very good. Both Kevin and I really like. I know that, you know, Green Building Advisor, one especially, you know, and for Iowa, there are some Green Streets criteria from the Department of Economic Development Authority. That has some specifications. But when you come down to, say, like mini splits and that, you know, most of them are put in by professionals, but they're excellent. I have one up in northern Minnesota that I'm extremely happy with. There are some that you can buy that are pre-charged and ready to install, you know, by yourself. The one we put in only took an hour or so to put in, but then it's not as efficient as some of the, you know, the bigger brands like Mitsubishi and Fujitsu and that. But, you know, in a lot of cases, though, you know, you do want to have someone design the system, you know, to get the maximum efficiency about that.
All right, Eric, thanks so much for your call. And I think it can be really daunting for people who think about trying to retrofit a home. And, you know, the price tag for a lot of those kinds of retrofits can be really, really high. And then the idea of doing it yourself is a little bit scary if you're not particularly handy. I mean, Kevin, when you're looking at retrofitting a home, is it something that a lot of people can approach themselves?
Well, just like Eric mentioned, the last caller, yeah, a lot of it you can do yourself. And there are resources, as Bill mentioned, online to help teach people how to do that. One thing that people need to remember, though, as they do a lot of that themselves, if they don't have a professional involved, is to just start thinking about if you have an older home, there's a lot of infiltration, and what that means, there's a lot of cracks around windows or doors and things like that, so the building is breathing a little bit outside to inside. So as you seal an old home up and you're making it more airtight, you need to be really careful in terms of moisture in the home, potential mold growth in the home, and if you have gas appliances and things, you need to make sure that you're appropriately exhausting those and ventilating the home appropriately so that you don't cause more problems by sealing everything up really tightly in an older home like that.
All right, so do your homework before
Correct.
You do work
Correct.
On your home.
Right.
All right, here's a question from Al. He says, I need to make the final decision on new heating and cooling systems today or tomorrow. I'm replacing both traditional gas furnace and electric air conditioning systems. Any particular tips on selecting brands? I have 3 bids with a wide variety of options and prices. Also, with Iowa winters, the complexity of the system and frequency of repair, is a heat pump-based system a reliable option?
Well, I'll take that first, and I don't know if Bill wants to expand, but the ground source heat pump systems have been a real successful story in the state of Iowa in particular. I was one of the leaders in utilizing that technology around the country. A lot of schools and public buildings are using heat pump systems, but many, you know, lots of homes are as well. And they're a really efficient way, uses electrical energy, but it's a real efficient way of heating and cooling your home. And it uses the ground's temperature, which is cooler than the outside temperature in the summertime, and it's warmer than the outside temperature in the wintertime. So it utilizes that constant 54-degree temperature of the soil to heat and cool your home. And so it's a real efficient method.
And is this what we would call geothermal as well, or is this something else?
Correct. That's exactly the
okay.
same thing. So, but the first thing for that person to do is to look at the utility company that's providing you the energy for your home and see what kind of rebates and incentives they have for these different kinds of systems. Again, many of the utilities across Iowa, the investor-owned utilities as well as the RECs, the municipal utilities, lots of them have incentives and rebates to help offset some of those costs. And you can gauge which system might be the right fit for you and for your home.
All right. And as part of his question, it was reliability. Of course, a lot of us have had called the furnace guy to come in and help us out. Are we finding with the geothermal systems that there is less upkeep? Bill?
Well, yeah. You know, I'm glad you asked that one because I have one in my home and was involved in quite a few of them at Iowa Central Community College. I think we have over 2,000 wells drilled at the college, and they're extremely effective, just like Kevin said. And the nice thing is the equipment's inside. You know, you hear people say, well, they're real high maintenance. Well, it basically operates like your home refrigerator. And you know, you see a lot of those that are 50, 60 years old, you know, in homes. And that was the old technology. And I really am impressed at, you know, the results that we've seen with geothermal. And when you get prices on them, remember, you know, like Kevin said, there's a lot. There's rebates, there's tax incentives. In the last new house we did, we compared high efficiency gas to a geothermal system, and we looked at all of the tax incentives and everything. They came out almost a wash. The thing is, they all have to be sized correctly. And one thing, you know, you do want to ask your heating and cooling person. The first thing is, you know, are you doing a manual J and a manual S, and that's just to determine the correct size and the equipment for your particular home, and especially if you've done, you know, some air sealing and more insulation to tighten that house up. Since the last equipment was installed, you may use maybe even equipment that might be half the size. So, you know, there again, it goes back, just like Kevin said, you know, you want a professional involved that understands the design, you know, how that home is operating, and a lot of times that's where your cost is going to change so much. Someone understands how your particular house is going to operate and design the equipment for it, and it may be thousands of dollars less.
All right. Our home improvement expert, Bill McAnally, is here with us today, along with architect Kevin Nordmeyer. And let's go back to the phones. Bill is on the line in Dubuque. Hi, Bill.
Hey, good morning. I just wanted to comment about new homes and new home construction. I've got a friend that built a very beautiful new home, and he gave me a tour, and I asked him, do they even consider, you know, LED bulbs and ground source heat pumps and things like that to make that house really efficient? He said, never crossed my mind, never crossed the builder's mind. They didn't even ask about it. So it's just amazing to me that these new homes, they're not even, builders aren't even asking these people if they want.
You know, and that's really sad, because actually, if it's a new home, if there's not, is it 75%, Kevin, now for the energy code that have to be high efficiency, or is it 100%? I can't remember what it is now. But the, you know, every new home has to be built. It's state law that has to be built to the International Energy Code of 2012.
Correct.
And if this person has a new home that doesn't have the you know, at least high efficiency fluorescence in the home, it's not built to code anyway. And the only two codes that are mandated in Iowa are the electrical code and the energy code. The building codes are adopted, but that new home was supposed to be built under the energy code if it's in the last, you know, 3-4 years. And so that all that information is out there. Builders are responsible to know that they have to build to these codes. That's not even something that should even be discussed in the end. It should have happened automatically.
Bill, thanks so much for bringing that up. And I do think that there's still a sort of feeling that green building is something that is not within the financial capability of most people, something, I guess, an elite thing to do. Kevin, do you feel like that's shifting?
Oh, there's been a huge shift there. In the early 1990s, when we were first starting to talk about sustainable design and green building, there wasn't a lot of information out there. Products weren't necessarily recycled content, or manufacturers didn't necessarily know what the chemicals they were using to make the materials, you know, what they were doing in terms of off-gassing and things like that. But just throughout the 90s alone, and then in the first decade of this century, that loop has largely been completed now, where the United States Green Building Council that was created in the 90s was one of the leading organizations in the country that helped transform our industry to where now there's many products are all recycled content or low volatile organic compound in terms of their makeup. And so practically to do a basic level green construction today really does not cost any more money than what a typical building that's not considering those things would, because most of the materials have recycled content and things like that. And our codes have all ratcheted up, as Bill mentioned. So codes are just in the last 6 or 7 years, codes are almost 30% more efficient for commercial buildings and residential. Our code standards have all elevated. So if you're building to code, it's largely a green building, if you will, just by the nature of where the industry has gone.
Interesting. All right, let's go back to the phones. Jerry's on the line in Pleasant Valley. Hi, Jerry.
Hey, I wanted to ask Kevin, who's really deciding what this house looks like? Do people tell you what they want, or do you tell them what to do?
Well, for my practice, we largely do commercial and institutional structures and some residential. But for a lot of the residential projects you see being built in the suburbs across Iowa communities, a lot of those are being built from plans that are designed and in a book, like a plan book. And that started actually at the turn of the last century with Sears and Roebuck. They had like homes that they just designed and would build all across the country and ship the materials to the site. And so that notion of plan book houses is a really old and institutionalized method where, and that's what Charity mentioned at the beginning of the show, where houses, you can get a house plan that's built in Florida and you can build it in Iowa. And so that's not necessarily a good thing. Because what we need to understand is the climate in Florida is different than the climate in Iowa and so forth. So so a lot of the buildings that you see, to answer your question, are really sort of pulled out of a book and maybe tweaked a little bit for your personal taste. But a lot of what you see being built in residential developments are from sort of plan books.
All right, Jerry, thanks a lot for your call. The number to call to join the conversation, 866-780-9100. Next up, Jacob is on the line in Marshalltown. Hi, Jacob.
Hi, Charity. I just thought you might like to know that we teach a program. I'm an instructor at Hawkeye Community College in Waterloo. We teach a two-year AAS degree program in this very subject. It's called Sustainable Construction Design. And our graduates come away with an AAS degree, and they have the knowledge to design and build zero-net energy houses that produce as much energy as they use. And I thought your listeners might be interested in knowing that.
So there is a real growing field in education and preparing people to build this way as well. Bill?
Yeah, there is, and it's good to have Jacob on the line. He was kind of a pioneer in this type of construction years ago, and you know, he's really got a good program going over there. There is, and just recently we received some information that more of the community colleges probably want to start copying what Jacob's doing, but they want to have some more building science and energy auditing curriculum developed, because you know, we're seeing that since, especially during the for the code, each new home or new addition that's built in Iowa is required to have a blower door test at the end, which is basically pressurizes the building and checks to see if it meets the air leakage requirements and other issues that were built in the new home. And so there's a need for people to understand how these homes are built and how to perform and the importance of indoor air quality and volatile organic compounds. I mean, all these issues are part of information that builders need to know. Now, when we were building in the 70s, we're basically doing like a garage and throwing some insulation in it and calling it a house. We didn't understand moisture flow, and home builders back then, we didn't take advantage of, the expertise of, someone like Kevin. We didn't. We just thought, okay, this is the way we build, and now we understand it. It's a huge difference, and Kevin's a little bit humble on some of the stuff that he's done, because the designs that he's done are some of them are, you know, are some of the most energy efficient buildings in the country. And, you know, I am still impressed of walking in one building and I'm watching how the lights change because of the lighting coming through the windows. The loads go down when it gets brighter and the lumens in the room stay the same and it's all controlled due to the outside lighting. You know, those are the things that people said, oh, that's green construction. No, that's smart. I mean, that's intelligent design.
Well, and Kevin, we're coming up on a break. Do you have anything to add to that? I mean, you talked about how rapidly this field has grown. Is it still growing exponentially?
There's still a great need for continuing education across the public and professionals. Technologies constantly change, there's a greater public awareness of the issues. There's greater demand on energy conservation, and we just need to keep pushing forward.
We're going to take a short break. We'll be back in just a moment. This hour, our home improvement expert, Bill McAnally, is here with us, along with Kevin Nordmeyer, who is an architect and principal at BNIM Architects in Des Moines. He specializes in green building and is the former director of the Iowa Energy Center. You're welcome to join the conversation with your questions. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. This is Talk of Iowa. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This hour, our home improvement expert, Bill McAnally, is here, along with Kevin Nordmeyer. He's an architect and principal at BNIM Architects in Des Moines. We're talking mostly about energy efficiency this hour, but you're welcome to join the conversation with your questions on energy efficiency, on green building, or any of the things on your home improvement to-do list. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. We've got a couple related questions here, so we'll start with Rick in Iowa City. Hi, Rick.
Good morning.
Hi, what's your question?
I'd like Bill and Kevin's opinion. Excuse me, summer cold. I've had two heating contractors recommend that I run my heating fan, or the fan for the furnace, which also circulates the AC, and having it run 24/7, they said it's more efficient, that it takes a lot more power kicking on, and that also perhaps it would save as many as one cycle per hour in the air conditioning. And I was just wondering what they felt about that statement, and if it's true, or you know, just what their ideas are.
Okay, so whether running your fan 24 hours a day is actually an energy efficient move.
I'll let Kevin do this one. I know he's going to like this one.
All right.
Well, there's a lot of variables there. The size of your home, the age of your home, the size of the equipment. If the equipment isn't necessarily sized correctly for your home, you know, running it all the time wouldn't necessarily be a good thing. So the answer isn't necessarily clear cut. Typically, it's not. The more you run it, the more energy you're using. So that's usually not a good thing. So the first thing to do is to make sure you have the right sized piece of equipment first for your home, and then have that run at appropriate times to maintain the temperature and humidity in your home would be the most efficient thing for you to do.
And how does he figure that out?
Part of that is what Bill mentioned. If the contractor is using the appropriate tools and resources, like the manual J that he mentioned, for example, are worksheets that they can use to determine, given that home, the right size of equipment for that home.
Okay, so if he had somebody in to do an energy audit or something like that, they could help him figure that
correct.
Out?
Correct, absolutely.
All right, Rick, good luck with that. And as I mentioned, here's a related question. This one's from Jordan in West Des Moines. I have a 4-year-old townhouse, and the AC unit has an automatic ventilation switch on the side of the inside unit with the options of auto, off, and override, or something like that. When it's set to auto, it seems like the fan runs a lot, and during the winter, the moving air makes it cold. I was told that it was important to have this thing running because the house is so airtight. What's the real purpose of the system, and how important is it?
Well, it really depends on what kind of ventilation system that actually is. If it's an energy recovery ventilator or a heat recovery ventilator, or if it's even, you know, those two pieces of equipment, what they do is they bring good clean air from outside, or well, at least the outside air, and they bring it in through a filter system. Then it's clean, basically, into your home. and then it takes a stale air out of your house, maybe high, you know, high pollutant level or high moisture level, depending on, you know, how you live, and takes it back outside. But then the part of the recovery in that word is it recovers some of the heat that normally would just be vented outside through a fan, and they may recover 75-80%, depending on what kind of unit you have, of that heat you would normally be throwing out. And some of the companies have realized now that when you just run bath fans, let's say, to ventilate your house, you know, it's a simple system. It's fairly inexpensive, but you're losing heat. But sometimes, you know, you may have some moisture issues in the duct if it isn't, you know, the exhaust duct, if it isn't put in correctly. But then the thing that they've found out that, you know, instead of having the auto and all that, that on the dial now, they just kind of have a comfort zone. And, you know, it's a little simpler. Then we don't have to, you know, think about auto, part-time, all this, 30 minutes every hour the fan's on. And it goes to comfort zone and then how you like it, because a lot of people in the winter, let's say, we don't want to get it too dry in the house. And so sometimes it'll run a little bit less depending on the moisture level in your home. What you want to do is get a hold of the person that you know, you received that piece of equipment and ask them, or get on the internet and look up that piece of equipment and understand. It'll explain, you know, how long something is running, because sometimes they'll have a timer on there. And usually what you want to do is you may want to exchange the air, maybe one-third of the air or 25% of the air in the house every hour. So every 4 hours you'd have all new fresh air in it. But then it all, like I say, it all comes back to comfort. Some people like it drier, some people like it moist.
And since this is a very new unit, I mean, it really could be that tight.
Yeah, it could be. And I mean, because some homes, it's amazing. Some homes that builders are building are amazingly tight, but then we'll go to another new home and it's amazingly loose. And you think, you know, how in the world could it be this bad? So that's another case of, you know, if it was tested, like say with a blower door, you would know. But you know, get back to the heating and cooling person. You know, they sold you the equipment. Have them explain it to you exactly like they should explain, you know, how the thermostat, these new thermostats work.
Okay. All right, let's go back to the phones. James is on the line in Des Moines. Hi, James.
Hello. I put a ICF addition onto my house with in-floor heat, and I have a bank of windows facing south, and I saw a shade that collected radiant heat from the sun and had a photovoltaic fan to move it through these tubes, and I've not been able to locate it.
Does that sound familiar to either one of you?
Kevin, does that? I've never seen that. So.
No. It does not sound familiar to me.
All right, James, I'm afraid we can't help you out with that one today.
Well, that's too bad. I would have really liked to have gotten this taken care of.
Yeah, well, good luck.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks a lot for your call.
We shot that one down.
Right?
That's right.
Stumped.
But Kevin's got a great radio voice, and it sounded good when he said no. We're okay.
Let's try another. All right, Dave is on the line in Indianola. Hi, Dave.
Hi.
Hi, what's your question?
I have a question. Okay, I have geothermal heat. Love it. Geothermal heat and cool. My house is 2x6. But what I'm finding with, and it's not just me, but I've talked to several other guys, and even I found out that I had a leak in my A-coil and my cooling. And the contractor who came out, whose product it was, they're going to stand behind it partially. But they're saying that a lot of these A-coils anymore are so thin with copper that they're breaking down. I know two guys that's got fairly new homes, and their A-coils have already been out once with leaks and stuff. And why isn't there a standard for the thickness on that? Why the older A-coils, I think, were pretty darn good and didn't fail nearly as much. Have you found any of that problem?
Well, I haven't heard anything about that, but I don't get out to hear as much on, you know, the HVAC of that. But I assume, you know, it gets thinner just because everybody's competitive on the cost, and so, you know, they're putting less thickness in there. But, you know, the thing is, they even if they are thin, they should be standing behind it. I would
think 100%.
Well, they will
for certain amount of companies, you know, and then they. you know, after like 4 or 5. Luckily, my unit was 6 years old, and they are standing behind it. But
oh, good.
And it's geothermal because we have 2x6 walls and everything, and it's a fairly new home. But God, I just love them because they really they heat pretty reasonable. I mean, and cool pretty reasonable.
Yeah, yeah, they really are when they're designed right. You know, they're extremely efficient. Because one last one we did, it's 4,000 square feet, and it's, you know, 2x6 walls, it's built past the energy code and everything, but, you know, it's coming out somewhere around $30 or $40 a month, you know, heating or cooling. It really doesn't matter. So, you know, you could blow that much on some pop and, you know, and some other side dishes maybe next time you go out. So
tell us more, Bill.
Yeah, I'm trying to back up. I'm waiting for Smarty Pants Kevin to jump in there and tell stories.
No, you're on your own.
All right, Dave, thanks so much for your call. Kevin is on the line next from North Central Iowa. Hi, Kevin.
Hi, how are you?
Good. What's your question?
Well, I hear talk of this blower door testing and stuff, and I've heard just loose talk of it around the area up in here. They were talking about it earlier, saying that it was a requirement or something like that. And I guess who's making a requirement and who's enforcing?
Well, do you live in a community or out in the country?
Out in the country.
Okay, out in the country. Really, it's under the jurisdiction of the state energy code official, which is David Ruffcorn. He's trying to, you know, he's having problems enforcement-wise because the state hasn't allotted any money for enforcement. So it's you know, you're required, but really there's no way that they can enforce it. But the thing is, if you don't follow the code, whoever did the work is liable for it. That's the issue, is you can go ahead and say, well, nobody's enforcing this code, so I don't have to do it. Well, you know, if it's a state law, you do have to do this. And, you know, I hate to say it, but, you know, one of these days somebody's going to get in a lot of trouble because they didn't follow the code. And the state electrical inspectors have been going around when they do the electrical inspections in the country. And, you know, most of them have been leaving the information at the house and telling the builder or the homeowner who's ever there, you know, at the time of the inspection that, hey, you know, these are the requirements. And all you have to do is, you know, just pull it up on the Internet, and it's all there through the state fire marshal's office. And, you know, that's the thing. You are, you know, they are supposed to be doing it, and, you know, whether they are or not, we hear this constantly.
Right, so even if there's not enforcement, it's a huge liability issue.
It's a huge liability, you know, because Kevin and I have been to sessions where there might be 100 and some people in the room. You hold up the code book and you say, how many of you guys have these? And not one hand goes up, and you're going, oh, my gosh, you know, do you guys understand, you know, the tremendous liability you're under? But, you know, I guess it's going to be a learning curve. But, you know, if you know somebody that's going to be building a new home or putting a new addition on, you know, you better say, hey, you know, this has to be blower door tested.
All right. Kevin, thanks a lot for your call. And let's go to Craig in Illinois. Hi, Craig.
Oh, hi.
What's your question?
We're building a new home up in northwest Wisconsin, and we're putting in geothermal. And they're looking at a 7-ton system. We're going to have radiant heat in the basement and in the garage, and then forced air on the main floor and the upstairs, so that we can also have cooler air in the summer if need be. The first question was really critical, and that is that, you know, we looked into the tax credit, and by the way, what we've seen is a tremendous growth in the cost of the equipment for geothermal in the last couple years. And I understand that it's much more efficient, and that's kind of driving the cost. But the result being a lot of people dropped out, according to what our geothermal installer said. What he was concerned about was whether or not that tax credit, which was one-third of the total cost of the unit, as long as it was up and operating by the end of 2016, he didn't know if you had to use it all up by 2016, or if you could continue after 2016 to carry over that tax credit, because it will be retired and we won't be earning that much money, so we'll have to carry over the tax credit. Is that ending in 2016, or will it continue on?
There are state, and we used to get questions like this a lot, and they still do at the Iowa Energy Center. And we would direct people to the DSIRE website, and I believe it's DSIRE.org website. It lists all of the incentives and rebates and things like that per state. And so if you look at if you go to that site and click on Iowa, you'll find all the different tax incentives and rebates and so forth that are currently in place in Iowa. So there are federal tax incentives for renewables, of which I believe the geothermal is part of that. But then also there are state incentives too for renewable energies. I don't know if the state credits apply to geothermal or not. But go to that website and look. Also on the utility company's websites, they have some of this information as well. To help you with that.
All right, Craig, thanks a lot for your call. Here's a question from Chris. Are there consumers installing either heat pump clothes dryers or heat pump water heaters in central Iowa? And what kind of results are they seeing? Are they a practical choice?
Kevin?
Well, Bill, could you address the one about geothermal water heaters? You
sure.
Installed one of those in your own home.
You know, they're really neat. When you tie a hot water heater to a geothermal, I think the majority of people do that. There's a desuper heater in there that you get your hot water. My home has the same thing. I get all my hot water from the geothermal, and basically my water heater is a storage tank. It's fairly common on the geothermal units.
Okay, and so that is a practical choice here?
Extremely practical. Yeah, I don't know why you wouldn't do it.
All right, and do you either one of you know anything about clothes dryers?
Clothes dryers, I have not heard of that connection to geothermal.
Yeah, I haven't either. Now, there are some air source water heaters as well, especially if someone has, they basically take the heat out of the room that the water heater is in. They're really good if you have a warm area in the house or, say, a commercial area where, the equipment's giving off a lot of heat. Well, then you basically are using all of that waste heat given off by the equipment, and you're using it to heat your hot water. I think we're missing on a lot of these larger commercial projects, when some of the mechanical rooms are so doggone hot, they want to air condition them. Well, why not use the heat pump water heater to pull the heat out of the room rather than cool it? You're pulling the heat out, which, effectively cools it as well, but then you're using that heat to do the hot water.
All right. So in the water heater, it sounds like there are more options and something that we may see a lot more of.
Yeah, I hope so. I hope so. And I don't know why they wouldn't come up with something with clothes dryers. Basically use it. Some way to heat. There's just somebody's got to be more creative. Come up with that.
Your million-dollar idea.
Yeah.
Go.
No, Kevin's the brains. I'm the brawn. So.
All right, Bill McAnally. Thank you so much for being here today.
Thanks, Jerry. Thanks, Kevin.
Yeah, thank you.
Our home improvement expert, Bill McAnally, and Kevin Nordmeyer. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Kevin Nordmeyer is an architect and principal at BNIM Architects in Des Moines, and this is a topic we'll talk more about. Obviously, a lot of people have a lot of interest in green building in Iowa. Talk of Iowa is produced by Dennis Reese, Lindsay Moon, Emily Woodbury, and Claire Roth. I'm Charity Debbie. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio.